The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
That's him! That's the warrior! It's John Cyrus!
Man, you're crazy. I didn't do nothing.
We saw him!
Yeah, that's him.
He's the one! He's the one! The Warriors did it! The Warriors did it! The Warriors did it!
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, thanks to our sponsors, One Link by First Alert, DDP Yoga, Indeed.com, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and O'Reilly Auto Parts. And today, I got two special guests who helped me celebrate the 40th anniversary of one of my favorite movies of all time, talking about 1979, The Warriors. Yeah, Warriors! Danny Boy O'Connor from House of Pain returns. He was on Talk is Jericho when we did the 35th anniversary show on the Outsiders movie last year. Danny is back, and this time he's brought with him actor Apache Ramos, who was in the movie The Warriors. Apache was in The Orphans. We're going to rain down on you, Warriors. This is a big line. He's got some great stories about how he got the part, what it was like being in the nearly forgotten gang. The Orphans are kind of the jobbers of the movie, and why they didn't even have cool jackets or vests like the other gangs in the movie. A lot of great, great gimmicks of all these gangs. We're talking favorite warrior, favorite fight scene, what made this movie such a cult status film, and why we think it should never be rebooted or have a sequel. Danny Boy and Apache are coming up. But first, I want to say thank you to one of the sponsors who's making this episode possible. I'm talking about O'Reilly Auto Parts. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Our professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years and years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Maybe you ought to show me your invitation.
How do you figure?
Well, you come arming down here, invading our territory. No permits, no parley.
We're not invading, and I'm parleying right now.
We were just at that big meeting up in the Bronx. We're going home to Coney. The train gets messed up by the fire and dumps us here.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. How could this be a big meeting if the Orphans wasn't there?
Listen, you didn't miss anything. There was a lot of hassle, a lot of heads got busted.
Yeah, you think the Orphans ain't with it? You think the Orphans ain't well known?
We didn't say that.
Well, we got a heavy rep. You mess with us and you'll find that out.
Let's get rolling into it here. So about a year ago or 2 years ago, Danny Boy O'Connor and I sat down to talk about the Outsiders, the 35th anniversary of the Outsiders. And it was a huge hit. And so when I found out it was the 40th anniversary of a very similar movie in a different way of The Warriors, I wanted to get on board and talk again. And this time we're joined also with Apache Ramos, who's actually in The Warriors, who's one of the Orphans. But first and foremost, Dan, isn't it crazy how there's a lot of similarities between The Warriors and The Outsiders? Have you ever noticed that before?
Me? Yeah.
I mean, for me, they're cult classics. Both of them are have some similarities. There's differences, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, both about young gangs that are kind of trying to make their way in the world. Obviously, one's a little bit more hardcore in New York City, and the other one's from Oklahoma, but lots of similarities there. But Apache, you were actually in the movie The Warriors 40 years ago. How does it feel to have the 40th year anniversary going on right now?
Unbelievable. I mean, when we filmed in 1978, none of us had any idea that we would turn into the Rocky Horror of gang movies. I mean, it's amazing. It's, my part was small, but people remember it. I think I said, we're going to rain on you Warriors 1,000 times, man. What I like most about it in the last 40 years is that the people who've seen it and what it meant to them the first time they saw it, which is the question I always ask when I do these sign-ins, and the best stories are the ones that people saw with their father. One kid said that his father never came around, and then his father promised to see him, to take him to the movies, and he didn't take him, and then he was supposed to see Lady and the Tramp, and he took him to see The Warriors, and he bonded with his father forever. Stories like that. And to be part of that, even a small part of it, it's like, you know, having a Super Bowl ring, you know, being on the bench and still getting a ring, you know.
Danny, what was your first encounter with the Warriors?
In like 79, my older cousin went to see it. He was actually originally from the Bronx. And when he went to go see it, there were a lot of reports that people were like fighting in the theaters and they were protesting the movie. And so there was a lot of controversy around it. So I remember being scared. So I never saw it on its original release in the theater. I think I had to wait till the 80s until it came out on VHS tape to finally experience it. So because thinking back, I was too young, even though I just turned 50, it was right at that era where, like, I don't know how long it stayed in theaters, but it also, now, you know, knowing what I know now, when I look back, another one of my favorite movies, which is like, you know, 7 Degrees or Some Kind of Bacon, is Over the Edge. And Over the Edge followed on the heels of the Warriors, but because of the Warriors getting like protested and banned in theaters, they pivoted their advertising in the 11th hour and try to say that it was a horror movie instead of being a dramatic film. And that was Matt Dillon's first film, and it's what led him to getting the gig in Tex. And once he got Tex, which is an S.C. Hinton book, and the same producer on that, S.C. Hinton meets him and puts him in the rest of the movies, in The Outsiders and in Rumblefish. So for me, it's, they're all connected together like that, and they all feel good. So, you know.
I remember the first time I saw it was my friend was, his name was Rod Slaughter. And his sister, what a name, right?
Is that Sergeant Slaughter?
Yeah. But his sister had the soundtrack album. And the cover was the movie poster, which if you remember it, it's this amazing piece of art where all the gangs, there's like 100, 200, 300 gangs in the very front, like Swan's there, and then one of the Baseball Furies, and then Cleon is there, and one of the Lizzies. And I remember just seeing this, and the tagline was, "These are the armies of the night." And it kind of had like, they're 100,000 strong. They own New York City. And it was just like, what is this? So he was always telling me about the Warriors. But of course, like Danny said, we're almost the same age. We were too young to go. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. So it became kind of a holy grail movie. Like, someday when I'm old enough, I'm going to watch this movie. And then like you said, Danny, I think it was probably when the advent of VHS came up that you could actually go rent it, was when the first time I actually got a chance to see it.
Yep, for sure.
Now, Apache, tell us about how you kind of got the gig in the Warriors. Because for people who are watching or listening to this, Apache's in Orphans. He's like the second in command. He's got a huge, awesome 70s afro.
I rocked the pro, baby.
But tell us how you got cast in that.
Well, you know, I had never really seen a play until I went to college. And I went to college in New England. And I had this great teacher. He was a fisherman from Maine, Gladden Schrock. Shout out. And he'd come down once a month. And it was only a playwriting course. So I started writing plays. And he dug it. He told me to mount them. And I was doing stuff like that. And he said, he sent me for my apprenticeship. And I went to Napa Valley. Anyways, long story. So I finally graduate, and you know, I'm trying to be an actor, and nobody's hiring me, man. You know, so I'm not getting no gigs. I was doing okay when I had my own theater group, but so when I'm in New York, I was getting really, you know, hardcore. It was a hell of a time. You know, the 70s. I graduated college in 76, the bicentennial, and New York City was lit up, man. You know, it was some crazy times, especially in the summer of 77, you know, the blackout, Son of Sam. It was crazy, crazy times. And we did have those gangs and stuff. But so I'm auditioning, and I had an agent, which I got through a friend of mine at the time named Treat Williams, another actor.
Yeah.
So I went to the audition, and I had gotten so many rejections. I wasn't into it. I mean, I was doing plays. I did a play with the Nation of Islam called Armageddon with Saladin Shakur. Stuff like that. But so anyways, I go to this Paramount Pictures, and there's 1,000 people in there, man. There's all these people in there. And I really didn't care at this point. I had a t-shirt. I didn't even have a resume, I don't think. I had a t-shirt, black t-shirt, Bronx silver leather, shorts, and a bottle of rum.
Perfect.
And so I'm sitting there, you know, watching all the people look like me, just all kinds of gangs and stuff. And I'm sipping my rum on the slide, and this white dude sits next to me. He had a beard, a little bit of beard and cap. We start talking, you know, he takes a sip, it goes away. So when they call my name, Apache Ramos, I go in there, and I have been sitting next to Walter Hill the whole time.
Oh, wow. He's the director, yeah.
Yeah, so Walter Hill's like, oh, man, I wish I'd have met you sooner. I might have cast you as one of the Warriors, but would you take this part in The Orphans? And I was like, hell yeah, you know, I'll do it. And then when I read it, I was like, man, this gang is really lame. I mean, we're like the Rodney Dangerfield of gangs, you know. In fact, they didn't even have a jacket that for us. They just had a T-shirt because they ran out of money. So, you know, I got the part, and Walter wouldn't let us see the Warriors. Me and Paul Greco, rest in peace, my brother. He wouldn't let us see them. So Paul and I said, well, we got these lame lives. We're going to try to make the best out of them, you know. So when we actually saw them was the first time we were filming. When we saw them, we started laughing because we were laughing. We were like, get the fuck out of here, you know, because I was born in Brooklyn and raised in the Bronx, and that's why my blood type is positive. But, you know, they were not threatening at all. But, you know, that scene... you know, everybody likes The Orphans in a way because everybody's been an orphan at that time. So, you know, years later, I didn't even go to the opening. I wasn't invited. That's The Orphan stick. We're never invited, right? That's why I got a big fan base because, you know, everybody felt like an orphan. But when the video game came out, it really souped it up. You know, at that time, when the video games came out, which I never played, I put my money in the jukebox. And when I saw these big signs in Union Square and all over the city, actually saw me, it really gave a boost to the Warriors, you know? Mm-hmm. And we got a whole new population. But I can keep talking. Go ahead. Let Danny talk a little bit.
Hey, you're talking about when Rockstar Games came out with the late 90s. Yeah, they ignited the brand because it was a cult classic forever. It's one of those movies, it's a rite of passage. It's no different than seeing A Clockwork Orange or Quadrophenia or the Who's movie or whatever. It was in the long line of those. But you guys, The Orphans, for me, they didn't have that same like marquee value until later when I started to, you know, I've seen the movie 1,000 times, but now they're one of my favorites because they are the outcasts or the outsiders of that movie. And that's what makes them special, is because they're not all like, you know, high pro glowed up. They're just holding down their court. And
we didn't even have a jacket.
I mean,
we were like the Rodney Dangerfield of gangs.
But because, and the gangs is one of the things that I just love to this day. I just watched the movie last night. And you see all the different factions of gangs, and they all have gimmicks. It's very much a rock and roll type theme. And the Orphans gimmick, they're like the AC/DC of the gangs. They don't have a gimmick. They just wear their jeans and T-shirts. And
yeah, but we had Mercy.
Yeah, but you're focused on too, like, you know, we don't know about the Turnbull ACs and we don't know a lot about a lot of these gangs, but the Orphans, we do know their gimmick, their fact that they're very disrespected. And it's a really great scene in the fact that you guys are going to let the Warriors through until the chick starts pulling her power and ruins it all, which we've all been through before.
Yeah, she wasn't Miss Elizabeth. She was more like Sable.
So let's talk about the costumes. There's some great jackets and vests and makeup in the movie. Every gang had a gimmick, so let's talk about some of that. But first, big thanks to First Alert for sponsoring Talk is Jericho and for helping me keep my family safe as well. Safe from all the street gangs of Tampa, Florida. Not a lot, but I'm sure there's some. There are three things every homeowner wants their home to be: safer, smarter, and more fun. And what if I told you that one link by First Alert has all three covered? It's true. First off, meet your family's new best friend, the One Link Safe and Sound. It's a hardwired, smart, smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a premium home speaker that's also Alexa enabled. You get all of that in one sleek device, built with First Alert safety technology and providing an immersive, great sound experience. The Safe and Sound elevates any home. But wait, There's more. Gets better. OneLink by First Alert also offers the OneLink Smart Smoke and Carbon Monoxide Alarm that works with the OneLink Safe and Sound. The device is easy to install and protects against both smoke and carbon monoxide. If smoke or carbon monoxide is detected in your home, the smart alarm will notify you via exclusive voice and location technology and send a notification to your smartphone no matter where you are, home or away. Listen, carbon monoxide is no joke. I almost died of carbon monoxide poisoning when I was about 9 years old. I wish I would have had OneLink by First Alert, but I'm not making that mistake now. I do have OneLink by First Alert helping me protect me against carbon monoxide poisoning. Very, very serious. But a smart home should start with smart protection, and OneLink by First Alert welcomes you to a smarter, safer home. Visit onelink.firstalert.com for more information. That's onelink.firstalert.com.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Danny, tell us about the first time you saw the Warriors. Do you remember when you finally got to see it?
Yeah, of course. I watched it. I got it. I rented it, and I watched it about 1,000 times at home. And so, I mean, that movie for me is like, it precursors hip-hop as far as like being a young guy. You know, that was like my window into looking into New York again, because I'm a native New Yorker who moved to California in like the same year Apache graduated from college, not to make him feel old or nothing. I came to L.A. in about 76. And then I had this affinity for everything New York. And so anytime a movie had a character that would have been like a New York type of dude, whether it was Fast Times at Ridgemont High, that's why I like, you know, Mike Damone.
Right.
I felt like he was an East Coast vibe, or the Warriors. I was able to like tap into like what I felt I was missing, which was that style that New York had. At the time, L.A. was just like surf skate culture. You know what I mean? And that was a little bland to me until later. So I was always missing for like the R&B and hip hop and soul and that New York toughness, and that movie personified, especially when you're a kid. I know Bobby Mannix, shout out to her too, who was the lady who did, Bobby did the wardrobe for and the costumes for all that. And she got a lot of stuff from like Ziggy Stardust and Kiss and a lot of other influences. And when you see all those gangs, there's also a music kind of tie-in with that as well. She's a wonderful woman, and shout out to her, because you know,
absolutely,
you look at the movie when you're 50 and you're like, believe me, I've been thinking it for a long time, like what Apache said. It's like, you know, we grew up in that street life, so that's like, it's corny, but you keep in mind that there's other things going on. And at the time, that was the coolest movie on the planet, and it still is, because I'm looking at it with those eyes. Nowadays, if you got stuck in the Bronx and you needed to make it to Coney Island, you call Uber. You'd be in like, you know, 40 minutes. We don't got a movie. But in those days, in the 70s, what Apache's saying, there's a garbage strike. The president tells the city, which is going bankrupt, to screw off. Son of Sam is killing women, so they're dyeing their hair not to meet the, you know.
Right.
And exactly. The Yankees are winning World Series. So it was a hectic place to live in the 70s, and a lot of people were coming back from Vietnam, man, strung out on that stuff. And so
I remember
the kids in the 70s, it was no joke, and that movie will always be that classic, you know.
You know, and that's the other thing about it, it captures that time period. You know, we filmed in 79, but it came out in 70, I mean, we filmed in 78, came out in 79, and it's something really dark and dangerous about those times, but yet there's a certain kind of beauty with Rembrandt, with the tagging stuff.
Yep.
There was something up, you know, there was magic in the air. And the whole threat, you know, the movie's not violent at all. I mean, Fox gets thrown into the subway because he basically didn't want to be in the film no more. And just that little shooty. But what scared people was the whole concept of if we all got together, we could take over.
Right.
And that was the scary part, because it was young people. It was different times, like you said, Vietnam War,
women's lib, a whole bit.
But it still holds up, and that's what I love about it. Like you said, it very much is a period piece. But because, and we'll talk about this in a bit, because some a lot of those actors went on to have very successful careers. I mean, James Remar, I mean, it's still so funny to see how young he looks here. But
I love Dexter.
It's great. Every character has a real... It's not just a typical group movie like, you know, Expendables or something where there's 10 guys and you don't really know. Like, we know each and every guy in the Warriors and kind of what their personality is, what they bring to the group. And then we know all the gangs as well with the gimmicks that they have. So it very much is an ensemble piece, but you know all of these different characters because they all have a distinct identity, which is very hard to do in a movie with so many people in it.
Yeah. It kind of marries the whole, I mean, you know, it's like a comic book personified.
Exactly.
It has that wrestling. It's got that wrestling like that, you know, the stuff that you guys do. It's like you adopt characters. You bring it to life, breathe life into it with all the influence that you bring to it. And every time they encountered, the Warriors encountered another gang, you're like, uh-oh, like what are their superpowers? What kind of weapons will they have? Some dudes are doing kung fu. Some dudes are got chains and bats. Other dudes are on roller skates and top hats. I mean,
you never know
what you're going to come across.
And listen, I got a friend, Chris, that I met at a signing. He just got into the Wrestling Hall of Fame in New Jersey, and he goes under the title The Orphan, based on my character, which blew my mind, you know, with that. But
it does have that element. And like you said, even when you mentioned the video game, like it's perfect for a video game because the Warriors start at level one and then they got to work their way up all the way to the top level to kind of escape and go home. And that's how the movie plays where, you know, just when they get done with one gang, well, then here comes another and here comes another. But overall, we know that the Rifts are trying to hunt them down. So it's a kind of a morality play in a lot of ways. Something like Shakespeare could have written in the modern day.
And then Chris, peep this. Right now, somewhere, somebody on this planet is whipping my ass in that video game.
What were you going to say, Danny, when I mentioned morality play?
I was going to say that, you know, it New York really was that way when I was a kid growing up. I mean, if you got off the train in the wrong neighborhood, that could be your ass. And, you know, thank goodness most of that is not that way anymore, for better or for worse, you know, whether, you know. But that movie will always be, you know, if you want to know what the 70s looked like in New York City, you can get a really good idea from that. There's always a great story. In the scene that Apache filmed, there's a Molotov cocktail, or however you say that, a Molotov cocktail.
Yeah.
And that was very rude.
Will you tell Chris that story, how that played out, Apache?
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. So this is the way I remember it. I don't know if it's true or not, but this is the way I remember it. I partied a lot back in the day. But, yeah, so... I see the stuntman getting close. I know they're going to blow this bomb up. So I see the stuntman he's my height, and he gets really close. And I'm like, shit, I want to be in this movie. So I get in close, too. So I see that they put some glue on the car, and they had some kind of starter thing. And, you know, Walter's saying, you know, do improv until, you know, we blow it up. So that's where the line, "We're going to rain on you, Warriors," came out, because I was doing improv, and he dug it. So... which turned out to be the line of my life. But so I'm sitting there and I'm, we're going to fuck you up, bro. And then that thing blew up. Oh, my God. When a bomb blows up, I thought it was going to be like on TV. But no, when that thing went up, the front of the car landed on that little roof, that first floor roof, glass. They forgot to take it out the windshield. So the glass was spraying all over. And when a bomb explodes, some people freeze, some people run. Me, I was laughing my ass off as I saw the glass coming down. Some people got messed up, right? So they was like, oh, cool. Okay. And this guy called Eddie the Torch, he comes out, he goes, sorry. And then Walter goes, let's do it again. So we shot it three more times. We blew up three more cars. But each time I was way back. You know, I was way back.
Because they told me, they put too much explosives in there the first time. So they weren't sure. It's that old 70s stuff where there was, you know, those safety things were not what they were today. So everybody got scared and it kind of took everybody by storm. But
shook me up.
When I first met Apache, we met and we were doing a podcast as well. I was able to, because I was in LA, I was able to introduce him to my friend Steve Mona, who's a retired lieutenant, New York City PD. He ran the Vandal Squad.
Yeah.
The train squad that used to chase all the graffiti riders around in the 80s and 90s. So those two got together, and he was able to bring Apache back to Long Island City to that actual street where they filmed all that stuff. And that had been your first time back in a while, right? Or
yeah, it was Steve and his son was great to me. They took me there, and I got a little like misty eyed. I mean, I hadn't been there in at that point. I think it was 35 years, and I felt like I saw a ghost, you know. And it was just a weird kind of thing, you know, because that little bit of time has impacted my whole life. I mean, I'm 65 now, thank God. But, you know, that and I really felt that moment. I'm forever grateful to Delta Bravo, Steve Mona, and Danny O'Connor and that crew. Because that was a wonderful thing.
Was that a one-night shoot, or how long were you on set for, Apache?
I don't remember. It was like a 4 days. But I really don't remember because, you know, I was doing some crazy shit at that time.
Now, Chris, you also know Apache, he road managed and managed a lot of hip hop groups and with the Fat Boys and the whole, so he's really like thorough with it, you know.
Yeah, I heard that.
Until he started working with the city as well. You should tell him some of that, Apache.
I had a friend of mine in college, Arthur Baker, and he's a super huge producer now, but he started a record label. Well, before then, he said, hey, Patsy, you want to be in the record business? At that time, I was working Bloomingdale's on the loading dock. And I said, sure, yes, the record business. Next thing I know, I'm in Long Island City picking and packing records in boxes and sending them to retail stores. But from there, I became a national salesman. And then when Arthur started a record label called Streetwise Records, he brought me into the crew. And we had a group that, I mean, we were very hot independent label, but then we bought this group from Boston with Maurice Starr called New Edition that Arthur had brought in. And you heard of them. New Edition just blew up. And I managed to get some other groups in there, like Colonel Abrams, rest in peace. And I worked with Lolita Holloway and Earthy Kid. And then I went with New Edition when the label folded. And with the new management team, Steve Bashaw, Rick Smith, and Bill Dern. And we had Ready for the World, who that was the only number one pop record, because everybody thought it was Prince.
O'Sheila.
That's right. O'Sheila.
And then that blew up. And then that, you know, that's the way the record business is. And then I was asked to road manage the Fat Boys last tour. 50 cities in 25 days. And then I ended up in New Orleans, and my wife was like, I'm not raising this daughter by myself. So when I came home, I turned into Mr. Mom. And so like my money ran out, and I said, oh shit, I have a degree. So I became a social worker. And I retired in 2016. I was on the front line of the AIDS virus. So I went from one day riding limousines to the next day, because I needed a dental plan for my baby. I wound up in the projects in the South Bronx in the Pittsfield elevator saying, what the fuck am I doing? But yeah, I did a good 26 years. I'm feeling good about that. Thank you, bro. I got a lot of gold and platinum on the wall. That just reminds me of all the money I wasted on certain things.
So let's talk about the gang, the Warriors, and all the great characters, the Ajax. I love Cochise, Cowboy. But before we do that, let's say thanks to the Talk is Jericho OG sponsor, Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. You know what DDPY did for my back and what it continues to do for me every single day. That's why I'm about to do another short tour with Fozzy next month. And while I'll be back in the ring headlining against Kenny Omega at AEW's inaugural show, Double or Nothing, I can't say enough about Dallas's amazing yoga program, except that you should try it for yourself if you haven't already. Here's what you got to do. Download the DDP Yoga Now app today and take advantage of the 7-day free trial. DDPY is the program you've been looking for. It's going to get you on the path to healthier living and keep you there. It's a kick-ass cardio program. It's easy on your joints. Take advantage of the 7-day free trial of the DDP Yoga Now app and give Dallas's life-changing program a solid 1-week try. Own your life for free. Get started at DDPYoga.com. yoga.com/Jericho. And don't forget to pick up Dallas's book, Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It. It's filled with lessons from Dallas's own life. It's going to help you get started with DDPY, and you can get it wherever books are sold. You still got time to sign up as well for the DDPY retreat, which is happening June 23rd to the 29th at the 5-star El Dorado Resort in the Riviera Maya, Mexico. I was there a few years ago. We had such a great time. We ate great food. We met great people. We did some live DDPY workouts with Dallas. You can do the same. Reserve your spot today at ddpretreat.com. Go do it. I'm telling you, it's worth it. ddpretreat.com. It's good for your mind and your body. Go check it out, and go check out DDP Yoga at ddpyoga.com/Jericho, and go do it now. Talk is Jericho is sponsored in part by Indeed.com. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your shortlist of qualified candidates fast. That's why you need Indeed.com. Post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive online dashboard. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try it for free at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
There's nothing wrong with you making it through our territory as long as you're coming in peace. Cut it, Mercy.
You know what that is, don't you?
Yeah. Trouble.
Lighten up, Mercy. Stop looking for trouble now.
Should have slapped your mouth the minute you opened it.
So who stopped you? Are you just gonna let an army walk through here anytime they feel like it? How's it gonna look?
Get lost.
And pretty soon every gang's just gonna boogie right in. Soldier right through.
I'll tell you. It's a man you are.
Let's talk about the gang, the Warriors themselves, and just all their different identities, which is interesting because you had a couple lines that you brought up, Patch, that I want to talk about. But of course, it starts the leader of the Warriors is technically Cleon, right? He's the boss, and Swan's the war chief. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
So when he gets attacked, because of course they think that he shot Cyrus, when the Rogues blame it on him. He gets beaten down. Are we assuming that he's dead here? Or do we know for sure?
Yeah, that'd be a good assumption. Although he might be like you, because I just resaw your match with Naito and come back to life again.
What did you think, Danny? Did you think Cleo got beaten to death or survived? You think he's dead?
He survived.
He's gone, man.
So yeah, I always wondered about that. So and then of course the Swan has to take over, and he's calm, cool, and collected. And then but Ajax is always challenging him, and I always loved Ajax because there's a friend of mine that I met back in 1990. His name is Lee Olson, and when I first met him, I said, "Dude, you look like Ajax from the Warriors." To this day, everybody calls him Ajax. He even calls himself Ajax. So
nice. Well, that's the proper way to get a nickname. You got to get it from somebody else. If you make your own, it's cool if somebody gives it to you. So good on you.
That's right. That's right. But Ajax, talk about what did you think of him when you first saw him, Danny? Ajax, this whole attitude.
I mean, between him and the Jerry, the Baseball Fury, who actually is my friend's brother. They're both those were the two toughest dudes in the movie for me. The number one Baseball Fury guy. Because I'm a diehard Yankees fan, and I thought these guys are crazy. It was a mix between Kiss and the Yankees, so how can I not love him? And then Ajax was just—I mean, he was the toughest in my mind of all the Warriors. So, but he was a loose cannon as well. And I don't know, looking back, those kind of dudes—you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I always called the Baseball Furies the Ace Frehleys because they kind of looked like that Ace Frehley vibe.
They do.
But Walter Hill was a big Kiss fan. That's why it came out like that.
Gotcha. But you could see that. But it's funny because Ajax, too, like loose cannon, but just very like politically incorrect. I don't even know if I can say the word. We might have to edit it up. He's like, what are you guys going for? Like, he's just gone.
That was a different time.
That's the way people talked back in the day. You know what? Sam Kinison had a great saying in the 80s. He said, man, the difference between me and you is you didn't make a record 10 years ago. And right. In the 70s, that was just the way we talked. It didn't mean, you know,
right.
Just like a way to emasculate the next cat. But that was street life stuff. And so when I seen a guy like Ajax, man, he rang the most true for like a native New Yorker in the 70s involved in like street life. That was like how they looked, they talked, and he wanted a piece of the action at all costs. And to me, he's the most gangster in that movie, besides you, Apache. You know.
Well, a lot of people told me that I looked very, you know, one of the first things I get is when I do these things is, A, was that my real hair? Was I wearing a wig? And B, I thought you were taller.
I get the same
That's
thing.
That's the way I carry myself. No, I've always been a short guy. That don't mean you can't carry yourself with respect and walk around and nobody will mess with you, you know?
But that's your real hair. That's the real deal.
That's the real deal.
Oh, yeah, there are some great hairstyles in that.
My high school photo.
I've seen it. Come on, man.
No, that's what I tell people.
Your hair was great. Snow's hair is unbelievable. It's like this strange flat afro that kind of goes out like a triangle and just ends. That's the best hair in there. The Cochise.
You know what's really cool on Halloween when I see a little kid dressed up as a Fury? It puts a little smile on me.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I assure you. I've went as the Hanson brothers in the hockey thing. We went as the dead presidents from the Patrick Swayze
Point Break
movie, man, the surf movie.
Point Break.
Yeah, Point Break. And we went as the Furies, without a doubt, maybe 5 years ago, man. So that's another rite of passage. And the Blues Brothers, you know. So
we have a group here in New York called Furies Revenge. I got to give them a shout out. They go to all these events dressed as Furies. Last summer, we have a thing in New York where they do the whole warrior route, where you go from the Bronx to Coney Island on bicycles. You have different stops. It's a race. And the Furies opened it up, and I got to call it out. You know, it's just so many things related to the Warriors. Part of pop
culture. Totally.
Remember when Shaq goes, "Can you dig it?" when they won the title.
Yeah. Just going back to Ajax, too, he was such a rebel. They had an earring. In 1979, like, oh, wow, he had an earring.
Big deal.
It was a big deal. Now, what would he get arrested for in the park? Harassment or soliciting?
Yeah, sexual harassment, for sure.
Attempted rape, maybe?
Yeah, I like when he's trying to run away with the bench. He's just trying to drag the bench away.
That's Mercedes Ruel.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
She went on to do a lot of stuff.
She did. You know, I'm thinking out loud right now, but you know, the only thing that just occurred to me now that's missing from that movie from a 70s New York point of view is that you guys never encountered any guardian angels at that point.
Wow. Exactly. Oh, they didn't go to 40 Deuce.
Wow. Hey, but you came out of the 70s second station. So, Chris, just so you know, I've hit just about every location. I've found a bunch that people maybe didn't know about. I've also, you know, there was a few other blogs that had a few of them, but we've hit every location that is still like around in that movie.
Oh, wow, really?
Maybe the exception or one or two. We've been to the graveyard. We've been to the station. I even, because of Steve Mona, we ended up almost getting in trouble because we went on the Point Schimmerhorn platform where they filmed, which if you know anything about New York City subway filming, everything that's filmed in a subway, whether it's the taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the Warriors, Michael Jackson's
Michael
Mad
Jackson.
Videos,
oh, wow.
Yeah, 100 other are all on one platform called the Hoyt Schimmerhorn, which has like three platforms. And I might be messing this up, but two of them are now abandoned. So they use it. They don't have to pull a train off the line to film over there. And we went and checked all those out. But it's quite a thrill to go take a movie that you're, you know, one of your childhood favorites and then to revisit the city. And to go to all of those locations, and ironically enough, a lot of them look the same, especially the candy store and all that. The one where, you know, you guys were on the roof, Apache, and
yeah,
the scene and the orphan scene. It looks pretty pretty much like it did the day of the filming.
The candy store girl, my friend David Goody, we went to where the candy store place was down in the Lower East Side, and it's now a locksmith. Yeah,
and you guys also found that they found the garage too with all the riffs in it too.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
that was a good
riffs. Exactly. We so Chris, that. David found that Goody.
Yeah, shout out to David Goody. That's Apache's good friend, and there's become like a whole subculture of people now that they dress up, they go to the Comic Cons, they go to every they got groups on Facebook They hit all the locations, and so it's become it's got a whole cult following and a life of its own. You know, 2019, and it's still alive and well.
That's amazing. Like you said, just how much of a pop culture phenomenon it is all across the board. Once again, much like The Outsiders, it's a movie that it's got some popularity, but it's not deemed an all-time classic by the powers that be. But yet it is, with a huge fan base of generations and generations and generations, because like you said, it does hold up and the story is so strong and the characters are so strong.
1979, the number one movie was Kramer versus Kramer.
the other good thing is it starts off as a book. It was like a dime store book, Saul Urich or whatever that dude was, and they had to tone it down a little bit, I'm told. But what year was the story written in, like the 50s, right? So it was like poppers, and so it was adapted to like a 70s thing. And then Apache, maybe you can shed some light on it. I prefer always the original run classic, but they reissued the movie and they added comic book scenes, and they try to kind of do something to it where they're calling it like a Greek. I don't know if that was just
trying to tie it
to Greek mythology, but I kind of don't love that when they do that to a film. Yeah.
No, I hated that version. And what it was, Apache and Danny, was I was reading about it because I bought that, the director's cut, thinking there'd be more scenes or something. I was having a heart attack, similar to the Outsiders reissue that has that cheesy, crappy 50s novel. Music playing. Yeah, so that's what Walter wanted to make the original War is. He wanted to make it like a comic book with the splash page art, introducing the new scenes and making kind of he wanted to do a narration, a Greek narration by Orson Welles at the beginning, kind of doing like a Greek mythology thing.
Okay.
And the studio's like, we're not doing that. So I think when he got a chance to reissue it, that's why you see that. And it's just a mess. I hate it.
Yeah, no, it's like messing with emotions. It's like,
right,
you already love it as it is. And so, yeah, it should not be messed with. But either way, what a fantastic film. It's a rite of passage, man. It's the kind of film that, like, if you're cool with your pops or you've got an older brother, you'll discover that movie at some point or another. Someone will bring it up and show it to you. We had a thing here in Tulsa last year. We brought Apache out. We screened it at the Circle Cinema. We had an art show based on the.
They made me feel like characters. A star.
You are a star, my friend. And in my book, it's the same way about The Outsiders. Whether somebody was like, you know, the star of the movie, or they were an extra, if they were in that universe, that to me is like, you know. And I think you don't need me to tell you that, Apache, because I see the way that the people, they gravitate towards you. You left such a lasting impression here with your positive, the whole positive mental attitude and your vibe. You're definitely, we got to do it again. But what I'm trying to get at is that it's reciprocal. Like, you put out a classic and people are still responding. And I see the way that you adopt people and you kind of ordain them orphans, and they feel it. And I feel like you got a whole crew of orphans worldwide. Cause I see
and orphanettes.
I know that I made up the love is real.
Yeah. I got my orphanettes. Cause like I said, everybody has felt like an orphan at some time, and that's been my shtick. And it's amazing how many people have responded to that, because, you know, the orphans are never invited and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I have this page, orphans page, that we have so, and I made up this word, orphanettes, based on Mercy. And we get to do these barbecues, and we had a annual fishing off the coast of Coney Island for Rogue.
Wow.
For Rogues. We do that. So, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, I've done so many things in my life, but, I might go down my last thing as the orphan, but I could be worse. You know, I'm proud to be part of it. That's what I'm saying.
For an actor, you know, any actor, and we're talking millions and millions of people that have gotten acting, to have one part and a couple lines and people know that movie, like you said, you could have done a lot worse. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, you know, I left when I left the record business, I was kind of bitter. So I kind of disappeared for a long time, for the 26 years. But when my daughter got married, she said, Dad, you know, we can't hang out like we used to. There's this thing called Facebook. And when she turned me on to Facebook, I reconnected with so many people. And I don't even go out and audition for stuff. And, you know, I get parts in little movies here and there. And a lot of times they want me to say, we're going to rain on you. But it's a lot of fun to have that kind of OG status.
Let me ask you about one random death in the movie where Fox gets pushed to the subway. It happens so quickly. But before you tell us the story about why Fox just suddenly dies in The Warriors, our friends at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration want to make sure that you're staying safe on the road. All of us, including you. That's right, you listening to Sheboygan right now. Texting and driving isn't just a dangerous problem, it's deadly. And if you drive while distracted, you're three times more likely to crash. Far too many people still don't recognize the dangers of texting while driving. And did you know that while you send or receive a text, you take your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds? And at 55 miles per hour, that's driving more than the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Think about that. I'm going to say it again. It's like driving more than the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed, if you're texting and driving. Think about that. Driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed, that's insane. You wouldn't do that. So why are you texting and driving? Keep this in mind. Between 2012 and 2017, nearly 20,000 people died in crashes involving a distracted driver. Okay. And if your own safety isn't enough to stop driving while distracted, here's another one. It's also illegal. That's why cops are writing more tickets to anyone caught texting while driving, and they're doing it to save lives. So remember, if you text while driving, you will get caught. You drive, you text, you pay.
Now look what we have here before us. We've got the Saracens sitting next to the Jones Street Boys. We've got the Moon Runners right by the Van Cortlandt Rangers. Nobody is wasting nobody. That is a miracle. And miracles is the way things ought to be. Now there ain't but 20,000 police in the whole town. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Let me ask you this. You mentioned earlier, and it was a very kind of a random death in the movie where Fox gets pushed into the subway. And it's weird because watching it now as a movie buff, you realize that Fox got really built up huge throughout the movie. He's very much almost the second in command of Swan. And then he just dies.
Yeah, he had, from what I understand, he had problems with the director, and he's one of the first ones to admit it. But you know what he's doing now? He's actually, I got to give this a shout out, but this guy named Michael Demetrius from The Runaways, the Broadway play The Runaways, he's doing a film, and it's kind of a Warriors reunion, and Thomas Waits is going to be directing it, and Michael Dimitri and Lenny, his daughter, wrote it. And it's about a guy who gives up his acting career, risks his acting career to be like a warrior, gang leader. So Michael Beck is in on it. Terry Meekos, Vermin, is in on it. And Dorsey Wright is also in it. And believe it or not, this orphan was invited.
Nice.
So, you know, they still get together, and that's a good thing. I got to spend time with Michael Beck in San Antonio at the San Antonio Horrific Film Festival. And we was invited there, and he's a tremendous guy, just a really super nice human being. My daughter was pregnant, and he prayed over my daughter. We went to church and everything. He's an amazing guy. I've hung out with Dorsey Wright. We did a movie together, the Van Bikers trilogy. So
Dorsey Wright was the Cochise?
Dorsey.
Yeah.
He's Cleon.
Oh, Cleon. Gotcha.
Oh, Cleon. Yeah.
Yeah, Dorsey's Cleon, and he's in it. He plays a priest, and Snow is in it too. And what I liked about this movie is that they fight each other. But the Van Bikers trilogy, directed by Eric Rivas, it's on Prime America. What is it? Amazon Prime?
Amazon Prime, yeah.
And you know, I got to give a shout out to myself, my solo movie here, High and Tight with Seth Abrams, who's a big Fozzie fan.
Nice.
High and Tight, my 15-minute short film, we got a lot of awards. That's also Amazon Prime. So that one I'm really proud of, because there's only two of us in a room. And it's a murder story. So check it out.
Yeah. We were talking about Fox, and what I had seen is that he had some kind of a falling out with Walter Hill, and they were arguing. Walter Hill just said, kill him, to the stunt guy. And the stunt guy's, what are you talking about? He goes, I don't care how you kill him, just kill him. And that's how they came up with it. It's like, okay.
Yeah, we did a But for the 35th reunion, we did Channel 11 WPIX thing. We had, it was Fox, it was Dorsey, and it was my man, Cochise. And they had the stunt guy that they threw into the subway, which was the first time Fox met him. And he also worked at in that Raging Bull. But that the actor that got thrown into the subway was on that TV show with me that we did that day for 35th reunion. But what I'm really surprised, Chris Jericho, is as much money and as much stuff that the Warriors have done for Paramount Pictures and stuff, they did not do a 40th anniversary like party or something. I thought they would, you know, get us together. We haven't gotten together for a 40th anniversary. So it's kind of sad.
Maybe you got to come out for the Fozzie. You got to hook it up, man. You got to get them as your opening band or something.
Put us in the ring.
But didn't you
get that?
Didn't you guys do that thing with the Rolling Stone, the last subway ride home? That was kind of a reunion thing. That was a little short video I remember seeing a couple years ago.
They only do the Warriors, and they're so like the Lizzies. There's so many of us that call us the Warriors B Squad that we don't get invited to these things. But when we do get together, we get a big response because people want to complete their autographs and stuff, but we don't get invited as not. We like the B Squad. The Warriors are the stars, no doubt. But we have the Orphans, and then we have the Lizzies, who are, you know, I still keep in touch with some of them. It's they're cult figures in themselves, the Lizzies.
I love that scene, Danny. Tell me, what did you think about the Lizzies scene where obviously, you know, Vermin and Cochise are just sucked right in, but Rembrandt is not. And thankfully, he's paying attention when it was all just a big trap by almost like the sirens on the rock in Greek mythology. Right?
I know, you can see it coming.
Yeah,
yeah, of course. Attention was palatable. One of the things I love too is the theme music when it opens up.
Oh, the music!
Also, it was a Walter Hill's homage to a movie called The Sorcerer, and that was the original theme from that. And it was used when the subway comes down the line. That keyboard-y sound. I'm trying to think who wrote that piece, but that you hear that music, that theme music sets the whole tone for the rest of that movie, man. It's dark and ominous, and the trains coming through the tunnels with that blue light. Ooh, it's another thing that's missing, you know, in today's world is like the undergroundness of the subways and Coney Island, and when there was still a lot of it left, and Coney Island looks nothing like that, and New York looks nothing like that anymore.
New York doesn't look nothing like that. I used to hang out when I was a social worker on 30th Street. My beat was Hell's Kitchen during the AIDS crisis when Giuliani was moving everybody out, turning into Mickey Mouseville. I mean, it was, that whole area, I used to hang out in all the Blarney Stones and the bars out there, you know? And a couple of years ago, my daughter said, come on, Dad, I'll meet you at the old Blarney Stone, because I used to take her. My daughter used to sing at the Metropolitan Opera when she was a baby. And so I used to sit in there. We used to go in the bar together. She'd sing and make some money, and I'd take her to the Jack's 99-cent store. So she said, Dad, for old time's sake, let's go to the Blarney Stone. You know, I could not find it without 30th and 8th Avenue. It's because they changed it into a sports bar. It did not have the flavor like a guy like Lon Chaney cutting your roast beef sandwich, you know. It didn't have the numbers guys in the back. You didn't have, you know, people smoking cigarettes.
Of course. I used to go to the Blarney Stone. I'm very familiar with it.
Ah, Daniel.
Let's talk about another one of the great characters, the evil Luther, who, of course, shoots Cyrus. And when they ask him why, he goes, no reason. I just like doing things like that. What a great motivation. But, I mean, obviously one of the most iconic moments, not just from the movie, but in cinematic history, is the three bottles on the hand, on the fingers, clicking together with the Warriors come out and play. I mean, so quotable. Just what a great catchphrase and a great part in that movie, Danny, don't you think?
Of course. It's one of the best. Now, you said something about, you know, the opening of the film when they're all going to the Bronx to that park. The ironic thing about that movie is nothing was filmed in the Bronx. That park is, what is it, Riverside Park?
Right, it was Riverside Park.
Which is, it's up there in like the 70s, but it is not in the Bronx. So that's another, like, one of those weird, like, oh, okay, nothing was filmed in the Bronx. The bottle scene is, it's everybody's nightmare. I mean, it's been sampled in rap songs to characters in other movies.
Twisted Sister.
Who would ever thought to take three bottles on their finger and clang them? But that's something that like a disturbed human being and a maniacal, you know, street dude would do.
Perfect.
It's creepy. It's perfect, of course.
Well, I heard he got the idea of Come Out to Play, which I've heard a million times, from an old neighbor of his that used to say that. So it's amazing what you pick up growing up and you use it, turned into this incredible thing.
It's hard to do those bottles, too, with the three bottles on the fingers. I tried to do it many times before, but it doesn't work with normal sized beer bottles.
Chris, you're supposed to use your finger, bro.
The fingers, Chris, are probably too big.
I think you need those 70s stubbies. That's the stubby beers.
Those are my fingers.
Another thing I love too is at the end of the movie when he's holding the gun and he's on the beach, he's gonna shoot Swan, and Swan throws the switchblade and it kind of goes like a quarter of an inch into his hand, and he's screaming like he just got his hand cut off or something. He's just like, ah!
What's really funny about that scene is all them brothers with hockey sticks in Coney Island.
That's some Canadian, hey Chris, that's some Canadian Trailer Park Boys stuff. They're still down with that.
But like you said,
the greatest part is when they
sing, I'm like, get out of here.
Listen, when Chris is a New Yorker,
he was born in New York.
That's right. What were you gonna say, Danny?
When the Joe Walsh song kicks on though, man, in the city, I mean,
oh yeah.
There's not a better way to end that with the credits rolling up and then walking off the beach in Coney and Joe Walsh. I still get chills, man. I probably post that once a year. The ending scene is just like, you know, the perfect song to wrap a movie up.
And once again, you know, I'm assuming that this movie had a budget, but it's obviously not a huge budget, but it's not a low budget B movie. But in the midst of so many people, you got James Remar, Mercedes Rule, and Michael Beck, and then this great Joel Walsh song when the Eagles were at their apex. I'm sure that wasn't cheap for them to license, you know?
Right. Well, that was Larry Gordon was like the producer on that, and so he did a lot of big film. So I'm sure it wasn't like your blockbuster budget, but they had enough resources, you know, to get it done. Now, what I hated to hear years later, and this is before the Rockstar Games, I worked at a company called The Firm. I had a record deal with them. They were a big management company in LA at the time. They managed Limp Bizkit and Korn and Pamela Anderson and a host of other people. And I had a solo album there, but I also worked with they bought the brand Pony, the sneaker. So I consulted with them on that brand, but they were talking about buying the rights to the Warriors and redoing it. And I used to tell them like, you can't redo it.
Right.
And it's not that you can't do it because I don't want you to redo it. It just doesn't make sense in the modern world. And that's in the 2000s, early 2000s. It's like, again, there's, you know, to get across from, get from the Bronx to Coney Island at night, it's car service away,
right.
You know, at worst. It just doesn't play out. But there's been a countless attempts to reboot that movie.
Yes.
I never asked, and maybe you know this, Apache, was there ever a sequel planned? Maybe not a reboot, but a part two or a, you know?
Well, there's been so much talk about a sequel that most fans don't want it. Some do. It would be totally changed because the flavor's gone. The old New York, and like he said, yeah, the subway thing. But there was my friend Eric Rivas, which I met through Facebook. He did it wasn't a major movie, but it's Lost in Coney Island, where he attempted to remake the Warriors movie on a very, very low budget. And that's how.
Right, but there was no official. No official like part two or any, you know. But
Earth,
I know people loathe the idea of redoing it, and I don't think any of those movies should be redone. They should be hands off. There's no reason to do it.
Oh, Danny, I totally agree with you because it's also such a product of its time. And also, too, you know what would happen. I think Apache said it earlier in that there's really not a lot of violence. I mean, there's fights, but Fox gets thrown into the subway and Cleon gets beaten to death. But other than that, if you're going to do it now, you know what they would do. They would totally, you know, if you look at Sons of Anarchy, just how violent and how vicious that can be at times. You would not have this kind of 70s innocence behind it as well.
Of course. And long term, all it does is bastardize the franchise, man. I mean, I guess if you're in the you know, in the driver's seat today, you don't care because you're trying to, you know, smash and dash. But for the fans, man, it only cheapens the legacy, man. It is what it is. It was what it was. It's a classic movie. I have a nice Warriors collection, and I collect a few different movies. All of them were pretty much all fans of, you know, Fast Times, The Outsiders, The Warriors, you know, a few others like that. And so I have a beautiful collection of, like, you know, historic stuff. And you know, it's part of mine and a million other people's out there, like, you know, a rite of passage of just growing up in those times, man. And it's something I cherish. It was a blessing to meet Apache, and through Apache, I've met a few other people on the film. And I always hold the friendship dear, but it's definitely one of those things, man. I couldn't imagine life without this movie, you know, or my life without this movie and the influence it was, because it reinforced for me that no matter what, that New York style and that era and that stuff, it's like where I came from. And so I've continued that, and it served me well for the most part, kind of like move through the world with, like, you know, that in the quiver, if you will. It's like another arrow, you know, in my, yeah, of course, the Warriors, I grew up that, you know, it's like it's a bop and a step that we have as New Yorkers as we move out into the rest of the world. So I'm thankful for that movie in more ways than one.
And Chris, if they did a remake, you know, I was going to rain on the Warriors, but at my age now, I'll be spritzing on them.
Last couple things as we wind down. I love, you mentioned In the City, the DJ. We just see the close-up of her lips.
Ah, of course.
That's something
Lynn that... Lynn Pippen.
Yes.
Lynn Pippen. They named a school after her.
But what an amazing cinematic choice to just film the close-up of her lips the whole time.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Boppers.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, come on, Boppers.
And she was in, what was the TV show she was in, Apache? She was a long-standing in one of
those. I knew he was going to ask me, like, some kind of crime and punishment. She was a judge. But they named the school from wherever she came from. They named the school after her.
I think that's awesome. I think she was also in Lean on Me, that movie that Morgan Freeman made.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, wasn't she in that? Because I remember seeing her and going, I know those lips anywhere. That's got to be her. And it was. But and also, to you, when we're talking about just the gangs. And so I just wanted to go online. I just looked up the gang names, and I'll just read some of them to you. So we got the Warriors, the Gramercy Riffs, the Rogues. Right. That was Luther's gang. The Turnbull ACs. They were the ones.
The ball-headed guys. They got an extra $100 to cut and shave their heads. That was big money in the 70s.
And that was a big deal in the 70s and 80s, because I'll tell you what, I can't tell you how many people I met here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that tell me they could have been an extra in the movie The Outsiders, but they refused to cut their hair to 60s style. And in the early 80s, late 70s, to cut those golden locks was like, no way. You were not getting laid if you had short hair, I assure you.
Then, of course, we got the Orphans. That's your boys right there.
Yeah.
The Baseball Furies. Another thing I was going to say, too, is there's whoever did the sound editing, they got their money's worth out of that feet hitting the cement running sound. Because you hear that 100 times. If you're going to play a drinking game every time somebody's running in the Warriors, you'd be f***ing loaded in about 10 minutes. Then you got the Lizzies, the Punks. That was the guys on the roller skates.
Oh, great guy. You know, oh, my God, his name escapes me. But he's really a great guy. He was that story I told you about when the blonde blew up. He was the extra, the short guy sitting next to the car when it blew up. He was the roller skating guy. Oh, I can't think of his name. I hate that. Being 65 sucks.
I think his name is Conrad.
Yes, Conrad Sheehan.
There you go.
Great there guy. You go.
He wrote a book, something about Taoist. He's a really great guy. He works with prisoners and stuff. He's a teacher. He's a really good guy, man. You know, it's a good cast.
What about the Moon Runners? You forgot them.
The Moon Runners. Which gimmick did they have? I'm trying to see what they are.
I forget. They had a patch with a moon that looked like the cocaine moon.
Hold
from
on.
Studio 54.
Yeah, I just found it. It said the Moon Runners make their way to Van Cortlandt Park. They may look ready to jazzercise, but their standard issue necklaces, complete with moon pendants, pay tribute to their toughness. And they're wearing like headbands and purple net vests. So there you go.
Now, what about the Mongolian-looking Chinese dudes on the subways?
Yeah, my friend. So we have our little our barbecues. My brother James Fung, he dresses up as that guy. It's so fun, much fun to see all these grown people.
Keep in mind, growing up as a kid in the 70s, you guys know, Sundays, it was all Kung Fu theater type stuff. I mean, so it had that element too, man. You know what I mean? It had like a little bit of everything. It really is, now that I think of it. Now I know why you love it so much, Chris. It's got a little theatrics. It's mixed with like fighting and martial arts and theatrics and street stuff. It's like, it really is a little bit enough to chew on for everybody. It's crazy.
And the Mongolian guys are called the Savage Huns.
Oh, wow.
And then there's the dudes that are dressed up like the pimps with the purple vest. They're called the Boppers.
They're
the Boppers.
That's right.
And then there's a couple other ones here. There's the Saracens.
The Gramercy Riffs were some of the coolest ones in there, man. That was some real, that, if anything, reminded me like of a real official gang.
They were kind of based on the Black Spades.
Yeah, they look like it. They look like the early hip hop gang type stuff. Black Spades and,
Yeah, in the hierarchy of street gangs, the Gramercy Riffs at the very top, and their leader, Cyrus, organizes the Midnight Summit. So he was actually the leader, Cyrus was.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, once again, just, I think you summed it up earlier, Danny, just by talking about how much of a rite of passage is. I'm going to show it to my son probably this weekend because he's at the age where I think he's going to appreciate it. But last question for you guys, and it's a twofold one. What's your favorite scene in the movie, and who is your favorite member of the Warriors?
Oh, that might get me in trouble. My favorite, I would have to say it's close between Dorsey and Coach Cheese. David Harris, because we keep in touch a lot. And my favorite scene is the one that's the most unbelievable, is a bunch of guys taking the time to be in a gang, to put makeup on and run around with bats. you gotta love that Fury scene, you know? I mean, I love my scene, but you gotta love the Fury scene because it's so unrealistic, but it works. It worked.
But it was perfect.
And what I love about that is Ajax's line where Cowboy can't keep up. And he's like, I can't make it. Are you sure? Yeah, good, because I'm sick of all this running. And then Ajax just goes to town. How about you, Danny?
I mean, that's everybody's favorite. That's mine, too, man. The music in it. They start coming out of the subway station. They see him. They start running. I mean, it's literally, it's like Kiss meets, like, oh, I don't know. You know, it had all the right.
Kiss meets the Yankees.
Yeah.
There you go. And it's just that I'm with you. When Ajax just steals the show. He's just tired of running. Yeah. He said, I'm going to stick this bat up your ass and turn you into a popsicle. When you're 14, you're like, hell yeah. I went out in the park and tried to make popsicles myself after that scene. It's like, it's what happens when you watch the Kung Fu on Sundays. You try to kick everybody's ass with the stuff you saw on the television.
That's right.
So believe me when I tell you, Chris, that movie was like, you know.
I never understood why the Warriors didn't call for a cab or call their boys to come get them. I never understood.
I mean, and you know what? I want to say shout out to Paul Grieco, which was the orphan that was, you know,
our orphan leader, Paul Grieco.
Yeah, that's a Patrick's buddy, and he's no longer with us. But shout out to him, man.
Yeah, I just want to give you a quick story, Chris, because you'll dig this, because you're a wrestling champion. In 2008, there was a man wrestling champion who used to be Jesse Ventura, the Body's tag team partner. His name was Apache Bull Ramos.
Right.
Right. And when he passed away in 2008, I got so many messages. My daughter got so pissed off. I mean, because if you Google us, we're together. But everybody thought it was me. I don't know, because he was 10 times bigger than me. But, just that it was on the internet, that really freaked my daughter out. I remember her going, writing this whole big thing, how her dad's still alive.
My favorite member of the Warriors is Vermin, because I think he had a little bit of comic relief, and he just falls so hard for the Lizzies, and his lines are so cheesy 70s, like, ooh, give me some of that, like, just terrible.
He's like meat. He's like that guy at Porky's.
Meat, yeah, totally. But he just like falls right for
you're
it.
You're a real doo-doo-doo, Chris. You know that.
One thing about those Warriors, each one of those actors are really great guys, you know, just really nice guys. I mean, I'm an outsider when they do their little events, but they take me in when I get invited to them. And they're just, I've kind of grown, you know, the last like 10 years gotten to know them. Really, really good guys.
That's cool. I think what my favorite stand, if you're going by amazing one time only in a movie speeches, you got Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glenn Ross. You know, the good news is you're
right,
fired.
Right.
You got Donald Sutherland and JFK when he reveals the secret to Kevin Costner. And I think Roger Hill as Cyrus. That speech is so good.
Magnificent.
It's so good.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to do you better. That speech is up there with the speech that Beale gives in Network. And if you've never seen Network.
Yes.
Yeah.
That speech is like incredible. And that scene. Between that scene and the Furious chasing the Warriors in the park, I don't even know how you would film a scene with real people and not CGI with that many people in Riverside Park.
Yeah.
With cops pulling up and everybody panicking to run out. I don't know that how nobody got trampled, but that thing was palatable and that felt real. And that set the whole movie's tone and pace from that second on.
Right from the start.
And a lot of New York City actors got work, which was another great thing.
Exactly. And it was funny because I was watching some stuff that you did at Patch. You got your own t-shirt, your own Orphans t-shirt.
I don't do these things. This is the most incredible thing. I met a guy when I went to Tulsa. I met family. And this guy named John Hamm made this incredible thing called Little Warrior, this portrait of me. And he just sent it to me for no reason. And this guy is famous. I have fans that they send me these paintings that they do of me. I mean, it's these T-shirts are made. I don't make them. You know,
yeah.
I just fans. The love that they show me and respect is incredible. I mean, I'm blessed to be an orphan, really.
You're one of a kind soul. And I even though the movie has that kind of pull, I think you cultivate that just with your being, man. And I know it sounds like I'm throwing you flowers, and I am, but it's worth it, man. You're one of one, Apache, and I'm glad that everybody shows you the love because all you've ever shown is love to us. So
yeah, I just wish my wife was 35 years was a little more.
But let me say this too, Apache, quickly. Everyone talks about your big line of, you know, we're going to rain down on you, Warriors. That's a great line. I love your other line just as good when the guy goes,
we ain't got one.
Yeah, we've been talking to our youth workers about you, and you're like, we ain't got one. Like the orphans are so low on the totem pole, you don't even get invited to Cyrus's meeting, and you don't even have a youth worker.
We don't get no respect.
Well, you get respect from us, man. Thank you so much, Apache, for doing this. And
thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate it. We'll get together again soon.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
It was really weird when you text me. You were on TV a couple hours later. I was like, wow, I watched the whole match. All right, Bob.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Be good, guys.
Stay gold.
We ain't even got one.
You're an orphan now, Chris. You're an honorary orphan.
Wow, thank you.
There you go. You heard it first.
Thanks, boys.
But that, you know, if you don't like getting invited, welcome.
We found what we're looking for.
No. No. It wasn't us. It was them. The Warriors.
You Warriors are good. Real good. The best. The rest is ours.
All right, if you haven't seen The Warriors, you've got to see it. I showed it to Ash, the fish expert, the other night, although he's 15 now. He doesn't want to be the fish expert anymore. But he loved The Warriors. He loved Ajax, as you heard, when Ajax gets arrested. Spoiler alert, he was so despondent. You got to check it out. He loved the Baseball Furies as well. And remember, the next time you see Apache Ramos, you can ask him to say his famous line, "We're going to rain on you, Warriors." It's such a great cult classic. So many quotable moments and so many great performances. And I'm with Danny Boy and Apache. It should never be remade. It could never be remade, and there should never be a sequel. But I'll tell you what sequel you should check out next January. Great segue. That's Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part Deux. We are over 80% sold out, so book your cabin today at ChrisJerichoCruise.com and have the vacation of a lifetime. We're setting sail January 20th to the 24th, 2020. Why is there so many 20s? Because this vacation can be 20 times better than the rest, and I want you to be there with us. And here's this, guest of honor, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, the greatest of all time, is going to be on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager. Didn't get any bigger than that, but we could try. We got the NWO, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Sean Waltman, X-Pac, brand new WWE Hall of Famer. How about Jake the Snake Roberts? Queen Charmel and Booker T is going to be there doing his Hall of Fame podcast. MVP doing his one-man show, Most Valuable Prisoner. What a story he has. Comedian Brad Williams is our host. He was one of the stars of the cruise last year. Vicky Guerrero, special cruise director, and her and Eddie's daughter, Shawl Guerrero, will also be on the ship. And Eddie's nephew, Chavo Guerrero, will be on the ship. You can never have too many Guerreros. We're going to have a shitload. Jack Slade, special cruise mascot and official keeper of the ice. Even if you've seen WrestleMania, go back and listen to the WrestleMania preview. We had a hilarious time, especially Jack's suggestion that Miz and Shane McMahon should have a Falls Count Somewhere match. I like that. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson will be doing 83 weeks live on the ship. Fozzy will be playing three shows during the cruise. Farewell to Fear, Rubik's Cube, the 80s cover band, will be on board. Great band with Steve Brown from Trickster and Def Leppard. Killer Queen, the greatest female Queen cover band, will be there. Dave Spivak Project is back. Jerick James Nichols is playing. How about one of my all-time favorite bands from Winter Giant, Saskatchewan, Kick-Axe, will be there. Go check out the On the Road to Rock video. It was a great 80s video. I love Kick-Axe, and I went out of my way to get them. I'm very excited to have them on the cruise. You're going to love them. Jerick James Nichols, also amazing player. We toured with him a few months ago. AEW, All Elite Wrestling, huge shows coming up. Of course, May 25th, Double or Nothing. Do not miss that. Jericho versus Kenny Omega. And also the Fighter Fest, which is coming up in Daytona Beach, January 29th. Also, Fight for the Fallen, I think it's called. The show that's going to be in Jacksonville. AEW's coming, baby. You can't stop us. DDP is going to be there to host more live DDP yoga workshops on the ship. Beyond the Darkness, hosting more creepy paranormal events. The talent list gets longer and longer, and we'll be announcing what we've announced to everybody. And now, unless there's some stragglers, but when we announced Ric Flair, we realized it doesn't get any bigger than that. So go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin now. We're ready to sell out. I'm telling you, there's only a few left. So if you want to get a good one, go check it out now. And speaking of check it out, come check out Fozzy next month, May 15th in Greenville, South Carolina at the Firmament with Nita Strauss opening. May 16th, Greensboro, North Carolina at Cone Denim with Nita Strauss opening again. May 17th, we return to the Lunatic Luau in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Always a blast. And May 18th at the MMRBQ in Camden, New Jersey at the BB&T Pavilion. Thanks to the great station WMMR in Philly for inviting us to the main stage on that. July 12th, Mansfield, Ohio at an Incarceration Festival. And September 14th, opening for Iron Maiden at the Bank of California Stadium in Los Angeles. So much great stuff coming up. And coming up on Friday, speaking of great stuff, Juice Robinson will be here, a New Japan Pro Wrestling superstar. He just performed in Madison Square Garden against Bully Ray. He's got a great personality. He's going to be he's a killer worker, too. So Juice Robinson, we got our eye on him, and he's going to be on Talk Is Jericho to tell you all about himself and all about what's going on in New Japan. So we'll see you on Friday. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy! Marius, come out and play!
The Westwood One Podcast Network.